Hello and welcome to the seventh episode of the I Brew My Own Coffee podcast, the podcast for people who care about coffee. I'm your host, Alex Carpenter, and first off, I want to say thanks to everybody who's listened so far and mentioned something on Twitter. We want to send a big thanks to Daring Macalope. He's the first person to leave us a review on iTunes and left us a good little review for us. That helps a lot, and we really appreciate that. So if anybody out there has been listening to the show and has enjoyed it, just take a 1 minute and leave a quick review. Rating, that'd be greatly appreciated. Since the last episode, I've been thinking about different topics to cover, and we looked back at a bunch of the episodes we've done so far, and we realized we haven't really covered some topics on how to brew better coffee at home. So just some basic things that if you're new to coffee, little things you can do here and there to help brew a better cup. So I was looking on Twitter recently, and one of my web friends, Justin Jackson, posted that he was getting into coffee a little bit more, and he started listening to our podcast, and we just thought it'd be a great episode to have him on and just have him shoot us any questions he had about what he could do to start brewing better coffee. And I think we covered a lot of good topics. If you're new to coffee and brewing, we talk a lot about using an AeroPress and just cover a lot of high-level topics on just brewing better coffee at home. And we had a lot of fun doing that. And this episode is a little bit longer, but hopefully if you're new to coffee, you can pick up a few things here and there. But maybe if you have a little bit more coffee experience, maybe you got some friends or something that are new, maybe share this episode with them, and that'd help out a lot. So thanks for listening, and hope you enjoy the episode. Hey Justin, how's it going?
Doing well, Alex. How are you doing?
Doing really good. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is really fun for me because normally I'm on like business and product and marketing oriented podcasts. So this is like something totally new, and this will be fun for me. I was actually looking forward to this all day.
Awesome. Yeah, for the listeners out there, Justin, I'll give a little backstory about how we got Justin on the show and kind of how I became to know Justin a little bit. He runs a podcast called Product People, where he shares stories with people who have founded products, apps, businesses, and he kind of inspired this whole project that we have started behind iBrewMyOwnCoffee.com, and a big reason why this podcast is alive today. So it's really kind of cool to have Justin on the show to be able to talk a little bit about coffee and his life. For the people out there, Justin, can you give a little bit more of a backstory about yourself and what you do?
Sure. First of all, that's really awesome that that you listened to my show and that was part of the reason that you're doing I Brew My Own Coffee. That to me, when I heard that, was very encouraging. And I think it's one of the cool things about especially the podcasting medium is that you never know who's listening and how it might affect them.
Yeah, for sure.
So right now my job is I do product management and product marketing for a startup in Portland called Sprintly. And then on the side, I have a bunch of different kind of smaller products. I've written a book on marketing. I've written a couple courses on building an audience for businesses that are trying to create a following online. And that's basically me, like professionally. And I've been doing that for, I think, since 2008. And before that, I was actually doing something completely different. I was a youth worker for something like 8 years. And before that, I was a web developer. I had a little web development company. So I've been doing a variety of different things, but right now I'm really passionate about, I'd say I'm passionate about products. I'm passionate about helping people build their own thing. And I just like making stuff myself.
Awesome. So I guess for the main reason you're on the podcast is to talk a little bit about coffee. And this episode is going to be a little bit different than kind of the ones that we've done in the past. I know prior to this, Justin is fairly new to coffee. He'll share a little bit more about that. But we wanted to have him on to talk a little bit about some high-level things you can do to start brewing better coffee at home. So we're going to cover a whole range of topics probably in this episode. And hopefully Justin can chime in here and there and ask a few questions. And hopefully we can help you start brewing better coffee at home. So for the listeners, Justin, where does your coffee experience lie right now? How'd you get into this whole coffee experience?
Yeah, so for a long time, coffee, I don't think I even had a cup of coffee until I was in college. And during college and for a long time after, it was just like it was just like a drug to wake me up. I was just in it for the caffeine. And so it was very kind of utilitarian. And I would, you know, when I started working, I had an hour-long commute, so I would wake up early at like 6 a.m., and I'd have my automatic coffee machine just brew, a huge cup, like way, way too much coffee. And then, you know, I'd take that in the car and drink it all the way to the office. And then when I started working in software, a lot of people, there's actually a huge coffee culture in the software business. A lot of software teams are really into like going for coffee. And we had this one company I was working for had a really great coffee shop right next door called Credo in Edmonton. And I remember going there and they were doing the pour over method.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of blew my mind. It was just like, this is weird. Like, because it took forever, like you had to wait for a long time to get your cup of coffee. But then when you had it was the first time I'd had a cup of coffee where I said, this is way better than what I'm brewing at home. Like this, there's something different about this. And so the taste was different. The experience was different. And I think it was also the first time I'd met people that were really excited about it. Like they had, you know, all sorts of siphons and they were doing all sorts of experiments. And sometimes while I was sitting, you know, in the shop, they'd bring over, you know, some coffee for me to, cup. Is that what you say when you like test it?
Yeah. Yep.
And so they were just teaching me things every time I was hanging out in that shop. And it started to get me excited about, you know, actually like drinking good coffee. And in the back of my mind, I thought, okay, I got to start making better coffee. And so I think it was around then that I got a Bodum and started doing French press. That was like, my graduation. I went from my automatic coffee maker to a French press. And I started buying like a little bit better beans.
Uh-huh.
And this is interesting because you're in the States and I'm in Canada. And so we have some like brands here that, you know, are probably different. We have a brand called Kicking Horse Coffee. Kicking Horse is a kind of a ski resort in Golden, BC. And they produce kind of, I would say, like mid-tier coffee. But at the time, that was a big, big step up for me. And so I started buying those beans and making, you know, French press at home.
Uh-huh.
And then I moved to Vernon, BC, where I'm at now, and my friend Andrew is just really passionate about coffee. And so I'd go over to his house and he would start making me coffee and telling me to try different things and explaining coffee and like kind of the different, basically just developing my palate.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, for me, I think if I hadn't gotten into beer, and just like really exploring like different types of beers and, you know, training my palate with beer, I don't think I would have been as excited about coffee. But because I'd had that experience hearing Andrew talk about coffee in a lot of the same ways as we talked about like a great beer. So then I just, you know, wanted to do that. He started sourcing his own beans. Like he'd order beans from all over the West Coast.
Oh, nice.
And he would bring them into Vernon, and he had kind of a coffee club. Like you could pay a monthly thing, and he would get you a new bag of coffee every month.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was like huge because
was he like home roasting then, or was this like an actual operation that he was running?
Yeah, so he would order them in; they'd already be roasted, but he handpicked each variety, and he would bag them.
Awesome.
So he would order in bulk, he would bag them, and then he would explain to you when you went and picked it up. He'd say, okay, this one has, you know, tones, like these kind of tones. You'll taste this on the back end. It's going to be really smooth. You know, he'd just describe it for you, and then you would get to go home and brew it yourself.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was huge. And he eventually started his own coffee shop. And for a long time, I actually didn't brew coffee at home because I just, like, loved going into his shop and having him make a cup of coffee because he was so excited about it. But just recently, he told my wife, he said, you got to get Justin an AeroPress for Christmas. And so she did. And the AeroPress, like, is changing my world because for the first time, I feel like I can make a decent cup of coffee at home. I always found, like, the Bodum, I don't know if I just couldn't figure it out or what, but I just found it was never like a great cup of coffee. It was like kind of okay. The temperature was usually not right, little bit too cold. And I found it kind of bitter and acidy.
For sure, yep.
So the AeroPress, yeah, the first time I used it, I was like, this is totally different. Like the same beans in the French press versus AeroPress, it was like just night and day. Way less acidity, way less bitterness, and just like a smooth, like good cup of coffee. So I'm pretty excited about home brewing now. I'm kind of back into it again. Now I got to get better beans.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's the thing.
I have a very similar story to you. I mean, growing up, I had just a regular coffee maker at home, but then once I got into college, I think I first got my first Bodum, French press as well. And, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing with that either. Just getting beans from like a local grocery store. And at the time I didn't know specialty coffee as it is today. Like every city pretty much has, you know, a little bit higher end coffee shop. So it's become more and more, known in the culture. So a lot of people have been going to those shops and they do now understand what a better cup of coffee is. And now they're trying to replicate that at home. And that's why this is a perfect, a time to start learning a little bit more. And, it's a great hobby. Like I think of it for myself, it's a hobby of mine, you know, just like you were mentioning, we mentioned that on the show before, you know. So many people are used to trying different beers. And one of the great things about coffee is there's just so much out there. Like I was talking to a friend on through Instagram and he posted a photo of a local roaster and somebody else commented that they were in Wisconsin, that they should try this other local roaster that I've never heard about, but they said it was great. So, I mean, that's one of the cool things. There's an endless supply of different coffees out there to try and different flavors and the brewing techniques, like you were mentioning.
Yeah. Well, and this is my first question, actually, is do you think it's possible to make a good cup of coffee from kind of like mediocre beans, or does it really all like start and end with beans?
This is a perfect starting question because I was thinking a lot about this, and there's a lot of things you can do to brew better coffee, but really it does come down to having great coffee to begin with. Like, I guess, like you work in tech and marketing type stuff. It's kind of like if your team built you an app that wasn't that great and you knew it, but
yeah,
you went out and tried to market it.
Yeah.
And are say like, oh, this works better in this browser or something like that. There's little things you can do, and that's kind of like the different brewing devices and kind of different techniques you can do. But really, at the end of the day, like you can't make that coffee do something that it's not prepared to do, you know?
Yeah.
So that's
you can give it a little bit of lift, like
Exactly.
You could use techniques to like lift it, but really what defines a great cup of coffee from an okay cup of coffee is the bean.
Exactly. I mean, coffee is, it's water and coffee beans. So if you mess one of those up, it's going to affect the coffee quite a bit, you know?
Yeah.
So like one of the big things with the specialty coffee industry and coffee beans in general compared to like a Folgers or like a standard coffee that you would have drank with your dad growing up or something is that the best way is to have the least amount of hands touching the coffee from where it is grown. So in the specialty coffee industry, you got kind of, I would say like five levels of people touching the beans. So you have the growers that are the farmers that are picking the coffee. They're picking the best coffee they can. And then it goes to the green coffee buyers and they are trying to find the best coffee. So it starts with the green, the people farming. They have to produce a good coffee to begin with. And then the green coffee buyer has to realize that, buy that for the coffee shop that they're working with. And then that comes into the roaster. And if the roaster doesn't produce a good roast from that coffee bean, then the levels are keep dropping from there. And then it goes to you, or it goes to a barista. And then it is our responsibility to brew that in the best way possible as well. So it's trying to get the least amount of hands from where the coffee is grown to where we are consuming it is the most ideal. And that is kind of the goal of the specialty coffee industry. They're trying to eliminate the middleman as much as possible to get you the highest quality coffee they can.
Yeah. Cause some coffees are just like mixes of a bunch of different varieties, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's blends for sure.
So how do you find good beans?
If you're in the, just getting into coffee and you're looking for, beans to buy, definitely look within your local area. The best way to do it is go into a coffee shop that is a specialty coffee shop and just ask the barista, these are the things I'm looking for. You know, I'm very new to coffee. What should I start with? You know, and usually if the barista knows anything or they have experience with their coffees, they can definitely point you in a good direction. There should be, you know, flavor profiles listed on the bag as well.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, if you're not a fan of chocolate, and you see that this coffee is one of the major profiles is chocolate, you know, that might not be your best bet, you know.
Is there like an app? Like, because in the beer world, we have, you know, a bunch of websites and apps dedicated to kind of crowdsourcing ratings, right?
Yeah.
So there's Beer Advocate, et cetera. Is there something like that in coffee specifically for beans?
Not necessarily in an app that I know of. There's a lot of coffee blogs out there that cover the different beans. One of our last guests that we had on episode 6, Brian, he runs a coffee or a blog where he just reviews different coffees he tries, and he'll brew it like in a narrow press or pour over and explain kind of what he tastes from those, the different brewing methods and as well as the coffee. So there's an endless amount of sites like that out there. And
yeah.
I mean, you got to take that with a grain of salt. I mean, it's their preference, and I know they try and be as granular with their thoughts on it, but I mean, something that he likes, I might not necessarily like. So it's best to just get out there into your local coffee shop if you can, or search online, try and find a roaster online. We have, if you go to ibrewmyowncoffee.com/roaster, we have been trying to collect as many roasters in the U.S. that you can buy from, and most of them on there, like if you start buying from them, you should be finding some good coffee outside of what you'd find at your typical grocery store or something.
Oh, cool.
Like that.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking at this right now.
Yeah.
See, I think, Alex, you and I need to partner up and create the Beer Advocate for coffee beans, because the advantage is beer is a lot like coffee. There's a lot of local varieties. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is that, you know, and this is actually a great example. you know, Canada is like 30 million people. So we have less people in Canada than there is in California. And so often we're like listening to podcasts and it's like, you know, you could recommend, you know, Nom de Plume Roasters in Arizona.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't apply to us.
Exactly. Yeah.
But having like a place where we could all, the whole world could go and like review beans would be amazing. Cause then you also get the advantage of, you know, like there's a place for tastemakers who are bloggers who are, you know, reviewing coffee from their perspective. But that's what I love about Beer Advocate is you can look at, you know, 10, 20, sometimes hundreds of people have reviewed that beer and you get a really good sense of, okay, is this a good beer or not?
Yeah, exactly.
So it seems like there's a little bit of a gap there in the coffee world still.
Yeah, I guess from a standpoint of coffees sometimes are like some type of coffees are like they only have them for a year on at a time, you know? They got a special small lot from a place in Ecuador or something like that, and they only can carry that coffee one time a year, and maybe that's the only year they can have it. So I think coffee changes a little bit more. And sometimes, you know, like you get a coffee from a specialty coffee shop, and the next year it's going to have a little bit of different tasting notes, and it might not be something that you enjoy that year, so you move on to something else. I don't know if you can quantify it into necessarily like a rating system, but I mean, there's just recently, I know there's this thing called the Good Food Awards here in the States. I don't know if it applies to Canada at all, but they review a bunch of coffees. And I know a coffee shop in the town here that I live, they were just, I think they topped the list actually. So
yeah,
there's a bunch of coffees on there that would be more than good to try out.
Yeah. Do you think, I know like a lot of coffee snobs don't like beans from Starbucks. What do you think about beans from Starbucks and why should I not buy my beans from there?
All right. So with Starbucks beans, most of the time you're going to see that they list that they do a dark roast, which means they've, when they roast in the coffee, they're letting it roast longer than a light roast. So it's going to, you can see it's going to be a little bit more oily on the outside. So I'm getting a little bit technical here, but I think once they get to that point, it's called second crack in the roast phase, which means that they broke the something within the coffee that released the oils from the inside. And you can definitely see, like I just posted on Twitter from our account, coffee beans that are a light roast where you can definitely see it there's way less oil than the one on the right. So I want to say that oil, this is kind of good timing because somebody just pointed out on Twitter as well that they were asking why that oil is on the outside more compared to a light roast.
Yeah.
And truthfully, I didn't know exactly the reason. So we've been doing some research and hopefully going to have an article about that posted here soon. But typically in specialty coffee shops, they're going to be doing what is a light roast. So it's going to be, like I mentioned before, you want to have the least amount of time from where the plant or the coffee is planted to your cup. So if it's in a roaster a little bit longer, you're going to be tasting flavors of being roasted instead of the actual true natural flavors of the coffee.
Yeah.
So I guess one of the things that I try and break it down to what everybody else has probably tasted is like if you've ever burnt a bag of popcorn, you know, you're tasting that kind of carbony, over roasted flavor instead of the natural flavor of popcorn or coffee. So that's kind of the a way to think about it in that sense.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we don't try and say like, you know, dark roasts are not good to drink, you know. People do appreciate that flavor, and if you do, we definitely suggest going for it. But a lot of the specialty coffee industry are going for that lighter roast because the natural delicate flavors from the coffee are going to be more prevalent.
Yeah. Yeah. I've totally experienced this. I'm just looking at that picture you posted on Twitter.
Yeah.
And That so on my Instagram feed, I posted 2 weeks ago. I was trying some Phil and Sebastian coffee. Mm-hmm. I think they're from. I don't know where they're from. I think they're from Calgary here in Canada, but it was like a very expensive, it was a gift from my friend Andrew, and it's a bag of coffee I would have never bought. I think it's, I don't know how much it was, but it was very, very expensive. Uh-huh. You know, maybe like if a normal bag is like $20, I would have, this one was, you know, maybe three times that. I'm not sure. Oh, yeah. It was like very expensive. Uh-huh. And it came out looking very light, exactly like that picture, kind of on the left there. And my normal beans kind of look like the beans on the right, like they're dark and they're oily.
Exactly.
And it was funny, like even like when you smell those dark oily beans, they just do kind of smell a little bit burnt. Uh-huh. It's kind of like it's the smell of coffee that I think we're most used to. It's like if you like opened up a can of Folgers, uh-huh. It's like that's what it smelled like.
Exactly.
But that coffee, that Phil and Sebastian coffee, that lighter roast stuff, it, like if you just like popped the bag open a little bit, it was like all these different aromas. Uh-huh. My kids actually, they smelled me, like when I opened up this bag, they could smell it. They're like, whoa, what is that? Like it almost was like sweet.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
It, really interesting to actually see that, you know, to actually see that like live, you know, like in my kitchen, like, wow, there actually is a difference between these two beans.
For sure. And if you've roasted beans that look pretty oily, like what you see on the side, on the right side there, you can actually look at the coffee once it's brewed and poured into a cup. Like you can see the oils, sitting on the coffee top. And I mean, you are consuming that. So, that's definitely going to affect the flavor of the coffee.
Yeah.
So, and also like any grinder that you're using, those oils build up in there over time and, can affect the flavors as well. So, I mean, there's plenty of different things there.
I never even thought about that. I've had this same grinder forever. And that is like, actually, when Andrew gave me that bag of coffee, he's like, I wish you didn't have that same grinder.
Exactly. So, okay, so we mentioned how important the coffee is, and now let's say we've gotten the coffee, and what's the best way we can start taking care of it at home and right before the brewing process? So, like, are you just storing it in the bag or anything like that?
Yeah, like, I usually store it in the bag or I have like this tin uh-huh. that I use. Yeah, is there a better way to store it?
Yeah, I mean, like you want it to be in an airtight container, if at all possible. Depending on how quickly you go through the bag too. Coffee, they usually say you want to consume like kind of a full bag of coffee within 2 to 3 weeks of the roast date. So
oh, wow.
Most specialty coffee shops these days will have like a spot on the bag, either handwritten or with a sticker that says the exact date that they roasted that coffee. And if the coffee shop is good about it, you know, they'll be switching out coffees that have been out on their shelf that, you know, if they haven't sold in 2 to 3 weeks, then they're going to be using that in maybe an espresso in the shop. So you're not buying that because it is, I mean, just like any type of food, coffee will go stale and it will go bad. So,
yeah.
I mean, when they roast the coffee, you know, they're putting gases into it and, those are released and like the flavor molecules you can go on forever. So it is best to, brew the coffee within 3 weeks of the roast date is what the general saying. I mean, some people say like a week, it can go, but from what we've experienced, 3 weeks is a good number to go from. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, at home here that we use, there's a local roaster that sells these, they're called a coffee vac. So
okay.
It's completely dark. It's a black tube, but there's kind of this button that has on top that once you push it and then you push down onto to seal it, you can hear the air like kind of getting released from the coffee. So you're kind of getting as much of the air out of the container as possible, but that'll ensure, I mean, as getting detailed on it, but that's going to ensure that your coffee stays good up to those 3 weeks, you know?
Yeah. I haven't even heard of that. I'm going to have to look at that.
Yeah. And
coffee vac.
Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes, but I mean, this is, if anybody's brewed coffee. Hopefully they know this, but some people, like we just did a coffee demo, and some people were putting their coffee bags in their fridge or their freezer, thinking that would keep it fresher longer. And we just don't do that either, because if you're just putting it in a bag in the freezer, like moisture will be able to get into the coffee beans and spoil them quicker as well. So
I was going to ask you about that, because we've definitely done that. We buy like a bunch of, in our case, Kicking Horse is the stuff that you can, like I said, kind of the mid-tier stuff you can buy at the grocery store. And we'd buy a bunch of bags and throw them in the freezer.
Yeah.
So I wondered about that, if that was like bad for the coffee.
Yeah, that's general. You shouldn't do that. It was kind of funny at the demo. This lady showed up and mentioned how there's this great coffee that she found, and she knew she loved this coffee. She wanted to drink it every day. So she was buying 6-pound bricks of this coffee at a time and then just storing it in her basement. And I was just like, no, there's no, like, it was this, I'm guessing a single lady or with her husband, but there was no way you're drinking that much coffee within 3 weeks. So it's kind of you probably shouldn't do that. But I mean, if that's what you love and you're happy with it, you know, like we're not here to judge you on, just as long as you're having fun with it and you're getting what you think to be a good cup of coffee. So,
well, this is the key, isn't it? Is like with anything, I mean, the word coffee snob doesn't exist for no reason, right? Mm-hmm, yeah. I think a lot of people are just either intimidated or feel judged.
Yeah.
And there's actually there's a lot of studies that show that embarrassment is one of the most powerful motivators there is for a human being. So, like, we make a ton of decisions based on avoiding embarrassment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I know even for myself, like, it's the same in the beer world, right? Like, you don't want to say something stupid and definitely the last thing you want is, like, to know that you've been storing your coffee in your freezer and then for someone to, like, call you out on it and go,
yeah, exactly.
You know, oh, man, you're a doofus. Because, you know, but there is ways for, I think this is why I love your show, is that there's ways for, ways you can encourage people to drink better coffee without being snobby.
Mm-hmm.
And there's ways to communicate those things without being snobby. And one is just like sometimes just telling people like the positive. So in your case, you're saying, you know, if you really want a great cup of coffee that tastes like, you know, a great cup of coffee from your favorite coffee shop, here's the secret. And people love secrets. They love being on the inside, you know, in the club.
Yeah.
The secret is you brew it, you know, what is it? You say within the week after it's been roasted or something?
Yeah, any time in between then's a good time.
Yeah, so if people think that they're being led in on a secret, you know, that helps them. It focuses on the positive action as opposed to like, the negative action of, oh, why'd you do that? Why'd you put it in the freezer?
Exactly, and truthfully, like, everybody's been there. Everybody, you know, like, from our generation back and your generation back, you know, like most of all of us have grown up with a drip coffee maker in their home. And that was everybody's first experience. And I can't tell you how many people have been on the show or I've talked to personally that, yes, the French press is their first entry into brewing their own coffee in a manual type method. And, you know, like I've been there. I wouldn't consider myself like a pro as like our last guy we had in episode 6. He is very into brewing coffee and can tell you all the different flavors and tastes, and it's cool to see and it's inspiring. I'm very inspired by him to like go out and try and get a little bit more into it. It's definitely meeting people where they're at and helping them get to that better experience, because that's the whole goal of it. Is just like, it is so awesome to be able to have a great cup of coffee and have the experience of, you know, cutting open that bag, grinding the coffee, getting that smell, and just experiencing it and sharing it with friends. I think that's one of the coolest things about coffee, in my opinion, and why we are doing this podcast and why the people who have been on this podcast. So,
yeah. What do you use to grind your coffee?
Yeah. Kind of going back to what you're saying. So you got You got the coffee, you stored it, now you're ready to go. And ideally, grinding, you're going to grind the coffee right before you brew. So within a few minutes of when you grind the coffee, you want to be pouring the water over it. There's the, like I said, the gases that get released. And when you do grind the coffee, those are getting released. The flavors, the smell, that's all getting released. So you, ideally, you're going to be grinding right before you brew. I know I was on another podcast here recently talking about podcasting, but I chatted with him a little bit about brewing coffee at the end of it. And he was grinding coffee about 2 weeks ahead of time and just letting it sit and then kind of brewing it as he needed it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you do want to experience coffee on another level, you're going to grind it. And you know that smell that you get, like you just said, you know, that smell is the part of the whole experience of brewing coffee. It, like, some of the best cups of coffee I've had are when I had, mostly on Saturday mornings when I wake up, I got the time, I take my time, I grind it, get the smell, and I take the time brewing it exactly how I have it planned out. And I just enjoy that coffee so much more, not because necessarily it tasted better, just because the experience of brewing it was so much better, and then sharing it with my wife and stuff. That is what, that all plays into effect, in my opinion, on the end cup of coffee.
Yeah, I'm always thinking I need to get like a smaller hand grinder, because I have like a huge, like it's got like one of those, you know, big plastic siphons on the top.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, it feeds into a machine, and I can't eat, like, I actually have a feeling there's like below the siphon where I pour in the beans at the top, I think often there's beans that fall into that middle part and they're just like waiting there for your next grind. And then it goes into this like plastic container that I never cleaned at
exactly.
The bottom, right?
So do you know, is that like a spice grinder? So like there's like blades instead of like burrs is what they would call
yeah,
them?
Yeah, I think it's blades, yeah.
All right, so with the blade grinder, it's very inconsistent grind. So do you see like some that are like, you got definitely bigger ground up coffee and then you'll have really yeah. fine particles at the bottom of it?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So a big part of the manual methods and this stuff is getting a consistent grind size. So you have a uniform size of the ground coffee that ensures the amount of water that's hitting it is the water that's going through it, actually through the bed, is gets a consistent amount of time on the coffee, so everything yeah. is equal. If you got some that are really big and or some that are really fine, sometimes that fine coffee gets through and you're actually consuming that, so it's going to put a bitter taste into your coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, with the French press, you get that kind of sludge at the bottom. Like, that's yeah. going to affect the flavor of the coffee and maybe put you off of that. So
yeah, and I think the other problem I'm having with the AeroPress, I'm getting ahead of us a little bit, but it relates to beans, is that when I pour the water in, I'm getting quite a bit of like drippage. Like, a lot of the water goes through the AeroPress
yeah.
before I can, like, you know, quickly stir it up and then press it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I read something about like the grinds affect that too. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, like, ideally, do you just pour like a stream on top of it and then just kind of let it sit for a little bit and push, or do you do it in kind of steps, pouring
well,
the water?
Yeah, so what originally what I was doing is I was like, so I put the grinds in to the AeroPress.
Mm-hmm.
And then I pour the water in, just up to number two.
Mm-hmm.
And on all the videos and pictures I saw, like, their water would like stay in the top before they pressed. But my water kept going through. And one thing I read is that having water that's too hot will like go through.
Mm-hmm.
If what do they call it? They call it like whatever. They call it like drip through or something like that. But then I also read this other guy saying, you know, if your grinds aren't consistent and if they're not like kind of the right size, you can also get drip through as well. And so, originally I was letting it sit there for a while, kind of like the French press, like I'd pour the water in and like wait a little bit, you know, but then I realized that's, I read somewhere that said that's not good. You want to press pretty soon after you pour the water in.
Yeah. So with the AeroPress, you kind of want a little bit finer grind size so that it kind of has a little bit more to, like, it takes a little bit longer for the water to go through. If you're using like a coarse grind with the AeroPress, it's like putting water through sand compared to putting water through rocks. On a lot bigger scale, if that makes sense. So it's a lot harder for it to go through sand compared to a few rocks. So, I mean, just apply that to the coffee. If you have kind of some larger coarse grind in the AeroPress, you are going to, I mean, it's typical to get a little bit of the water going through when it's just sitting there. So that's a little bit's
not bad.
Exactly. I mean, that's extremely normal. But kind of going back to the start of the AeroPress, one of the big things with any type of these manual methods that use like a paper filter, are you using a paper filter?
Yeah, I just learned that there's other types of filters. I'd actually like to ask you about that later.
Yeah, so with the filter, if it's paper, you do want to rinse it out first before using it.
Yeah, I just learned about that. So I just started doing that.
All right, yes.
Getting it wet before I put it in the thing.
Exactly, because, I mean, especially with an AeroPress, it's such a small amount that you're making, I mean, a single cup or whatever, that the paper flavor can get into the coffee if it is not rinsed thoroughly. Some people, they'll rinse it in, like, kind of that little cup that kind of seals it at the bottom, and then they'll actually put warm water into the AeroPress and push that through as well, just to be sure. That's kind of going a little bit overkill. I always just rinse it underneath the faucet really quick. But yeah, you definitely want to, any type of like V60 or a Chemex, you do want to, especially with the Chemex, because they use a very thick paper, that you want to rinse that out before you brew into it.
Yeah. And so what other type of filter can you use in an AeroPress?
So there's a probably the most notable company is a company called Able Brewing. They make a couple different brewing devices, as well as they kind of specialize in these metal filters. I think they first started with a Chemex filter that is completely metal, so it's reusable. And then also they created an AeroPress metal filter, so that can be used if some people don't want to waste the paper each time they use it, or sometimes it definitely produces a little different flavor compared to using paper. The paper kind of collects a little bit more of that that residue that sometimes gets through with the fine grinds that you can't really collect. And yeah, with the metal, I mean, they can only get so fine with the holes. I mean, it's like laser machined or something like that, so it does get a little bit thicker with it, but some people prefer that, or they prefer not to use paper. So those are kind of, I think, the only two methods that I know of that you can use, like a paper or a metal filter.
Yeah, and which do you prefer?
Personally, I like having the metal filter as a backup, because sometimes you run out of the paper filters,
yeah,
and you're stuck. And I mentioned this before, but I do prefer the paper filters in most of the brewing methods that we use. I like the clean cup of coffee. I don't like to have like any of that left in the bottom of the cup, because I like to consume the whole cup. So it kind of it makes me sad to get to the bottom of a cup and I see all the grounds in the bottom, and I just know it's just going to be super bitter. So I leave it there.
Yeah.
So
now the instructions say you can actually wash those paper filters and reuse them. Did you ever do that?
I haven't. I mean, they seem so thin, so I don't know how that would work, or if I don't know, maybe I haven't used an AeroPress in a while, but yeah, maybe that it could be done, I guess.
Yeah, I've been doing it. I've rinsed them off a couple. It's amazing how actually strong that piece of paper is.
Really?
Yeah, so but the only thing I'm thinking about is that it could affect because you rinse it off and it's like it's clean, mm-hmm, but there's obviously still some sort of residue inside that thing, that, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, it probably does affect the taste.
Yeah, I mean, you can get so detailed into this type of stuff. Like, if you're really into being thorough with this, you'd even go back to your grinder and you would throw like three or four beans through your grinder before you grind your new coffee, because they call it a purge, to purge your grinder of the old coffee beans that may have been sitting in there. So I mean, like, similar to the, like, reusing a your filter, it might have that taste or that coffee from the last time you brewed, and that could affect the taste. So
yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking I'm gonna get. I didn't realize you had these brew guides. These are amazing. I like, so on your site you just link to it, looks like a bunch of different people using, for example, the AeroPress.
Yep.
And the blue bottle one, he's got a little hand grinder there that looks perfect. So it looks like it'd be easy to clean.
Yeah, that's exactly. Kind of going back to that. Yeah, we at home, we use a hand grinder every day. We don't have an electric grinder, unfortunately, on some days. But we don't really have the counter space to get the electric grinder that we'd want. But the hand grinder that we use is it's called a Hario Skirton hand grinder.
Okay.
So I like this one a little bit better compared to some of them that are out on the market. There's these ones called a Porlex grinder. They're going to be a little bit smaller grinder and use more for outdoor use. Like if you're going camping or you're biking and you want to brew something, like these ones are a little bit more compact. The thing I like about the Hario Skirton grinder, it is a burr grinder. If you're getting in to grinding coffee, you want to find something that is a burr grinder. It crushes the coffee instead of just like dicing it.
Yeah, that's like my next step. I need to get – I've heard people say the blades aren't good.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. So one of our online friends, mutual friends, Paul Jarvis, he just moved out into kind of a wooded area, and he was asking us about a grinder that he could use that just in case the power went out. And I know he bought that one himself. I think it's roughly around $30. But, I mean, I use it. I've been using it every day for the past 2 years, and it does do a really good job of producing, like, a consistent grind size, and it is easy to use. Like, with this one, it has kind of the bottom is the size of kind of a ball jar, and it's made of this really thick glass that I feel very comfortable using and traveling with. So,
sweet.
But it has a larger opening at the top that you can just dump the beans in without having to remove kind of a top like cap. With some of the other like hand grinders, it seems like a little bit more of a chore.
Yeah.
To get that on and off every morning and put the little the cap on and the handle to go around. This one is kind of always together, and it's, if you're doing something at home more than anything, this is definitely one of the best ones that we found, which we can link up in the show notes and stuff. But
yeah,
I definitely highly suggest getting a grinder of some sort like that.
Sweet, man. So what else do you think I'm missing? So let's say I level up my beans, which I got to do.
Mm-hmm.
Level up my grinder.
Mm-hmm.
What is there anything else I'm missing, like that's within reach that I could do to level up my coffee at home?
I mean, that's going to be a good stepping point to get you on the next level, I would say. Next thing you could maybe look into doing is, I'm guessing you're using the scoop that the AeroPress provided with it.
Yeah.
To measure your coffee.
Yeah.
So getting even more detailed, like coffee, it's not a great way of weighing out the coffee actually. Darker roasts are, you should actually use a little bit less. Because the weight of it is different compared to like between the dark roast and the light roast. I'm not very good at explaining this, but the weight is different comparatively bean to bean.
Gotcha.
So you kind of gotta, the best way and most consistent way is to use a scale.
To use a scale, like a little kitchen scale?
Yep, exactly. I mean, we have a one that my wife had from cooking and stuff. So we just use that. Just something where you can weigh grams in is the best way.
Really? So you'll weigh it out, and then that's what you'll use.
Exactly. And then then you'll start using the scale as well when you're pouring the water on. So you know exactly how much water is going into it. Because then you're really dialing in your coffee. starting to.
Oh, wait a second. You don't use the little numbers on the side of the AeroPress? Like, you'll, like, measure out the water as well?
Exactly, yep. You kind of, when you're pouring over the AeroPress, you kind of want to do so, I mean, AeroPress gives you the general, like, yeah, pour up to this number one line and number two line, and that's a good start point. But when you start getting into, like, a few different brewing devices, I mean, you don't have that, like, on the Chemex or a V60 or anything. So having a scale is nice in the future, too, if you want to start doing that. But that's going to allow you to just create a more consistent cup. So once you get to a certain point, like, you know, like, okay, I want this much coffee beans and this much water. And then that's when you can start playing a little bit more with it and kind of, okay, I like this one day. Brian from our previous episode kind of told us a little bit about this, but he got to a certain point where he liked the coffee that he was brewing. And then the next day he'd kind of brew it a little bit different to see if he liked it. So yeah. If it wasn't good, he'd go back to what he was doing before. But if it was better, then that was kind of his next starting point. So you can always just keep playing with it. Or once you get to a certain point and you're content with it, just, you know, like, I've gotten to a point where I'm just happy with what we brew each morning. And I've been kind of happy with it there. I'm sure in the future, like, I'll get a different coffee or something and I want to brew it differently. But it's good to start using a scale and start taking the time to weigh everything out. It's gonna be easier for you to dial in and figure out what exactly you like. So
how do you measure the temperature of your water?
Pretty much what we do is, I mean, we use a kettle on the stove, and once we get it to a boiling point, we transfer it over into another kettle that is specifically for coffee. It's a Hario kettle. But the thing about that is it has a smaller spout. So when you start with the AeroPress, it's not as much important. But when you start getting into pour over methods where you kind of have to be a little bit more detailed on how you pour, this ensures that the spout comes from the bottom of the. It's a little bit hard to explain, but the spout, where the water comes through the spout.
I'm picturing it right now.
Yeah. It's at the bottom of the pot. So no matter how far you tip it up, water can only go out so fast. So it ensures that you're not going to, like, get to a certain point and then all of a sudden this huge, like, surge of water comes out of your kettle into the pot and ruin, like, your brew. So,
yeah.
I mean,
So is it just the transferring of the water that cools it down enough?
Exactly. So you kind of want to, ideal brewing temperature is between like 195 and 203, I want to say. So pretty much I wait for our kettle to start to boil. And then by the time that I take it off the boil, put it into our kettle that we use to do the pour over, it's probably down to the temperature that in between those two that I just suggested. Some people do go as far as, you know, like having a thermometer in their kettle and making sure
it's the right temperature.
Exactly. Cause I was just doing a bunch of reading on this today, but like the temperature really does play a big factor in, how the coffee is extracted too.
I'd like to at least figure out once I boil, and I transfer it to another vessel, like what vessel is that? And, you know, and then once I got it down, like actually have some sort of temperature gauge. And then once I've got it down, then I wouldn't measure temperature after that. But I just want to know the initial, like, can I pour it into a glass vessel and not cool it down too much or,
you know? The Hario kettle is like a metal one. It has a cap and it does keep it a little bit warmer than, like, let's say if you did it into a glass kettle. But if you're starting to do, I know you said you just have an AeroPress, but if you do venture off and get in like a Chemex or a pour over type method, you're going to want to invest in like the Hario kettle. That's going to, you won't be able to pour it from like your boiling kettle, like one of just like a tea kettle. That's it. You'll find out quick that won't work for you.
All right. Well, this is good. I'm this is my to-do list. I'm going to get a better grinder. I'm definitely going to start buying better beans, and I'm going to try to figure out in the meantime, before I move to something else, I gotta get AeroPress first, man. I gotta figure this out.
Yeah, I gotta figure out
the temperature. I think once I figure out the temperature, you know, that's I'll feel like I've leveled everything up. But that's the one thing I'm always like anxious about. That's what how hot is this? What is this water? I have no idea.
Exactly. I mean, if it is too hot, I mean, just like any other type of food, coffee can scorch. It can be burns, which obviously will affect the flavor and make it a little bit more bitter. So you do want to try and find that happy medium spot if you can at all possible. Stick a thermometer in your kettle one time and try and just let it sit and see when it gets to that point and just kind of go from there.
Yeah. Sweet, man. I'm excited. I'll have to report back to you what ends up happening.
Exactly, for sure. I mean, it's pretty cool because one of our previous guests, he'd only been into coffee for a few months now, but I've been following him on Instagram, and now he's writing it out in his book, and he's trying different coffees. And we're actually going to send him some local coffee from here, and he's going to send us one from his area. So it's pretty cool to see that he's kind of grown, and he's really starting to appreciate it a little bit more and experiment and have fun with it. So,
oh, yeah, a little coffee exchange.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I think we covered a ton of stuff. Is anything else that you wanted to talk about? You got any more questions? Or
yeah, no questions, but maybe like just quickly, I pitched you on this idea of talking a little bit about the jobs to be done when it comes to coffee. Mm-hmm. Do we have time for that?
Yeah, shoot.
So just as a like quick overview, jobs to be done is a theory about why people buy products, but it can actually explain a lot of, you know, things like why do we do certain things. And I was thinking about it in terms of so as an example, like the reason Starbucks became so popular is not just because they were selling, you know, caffeinated liquid. Like people were buying a lot of the experience that's involved in going to a Starbucks location, right? So it's like it's the second place. It's the place away from home and away from office where you can go and hang out. They worked a lot on having baristas understand know people's names and their order. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, people, when they came in and they were buying that drink, they weren't just buying that drink. They were buying the social acknowledgement from the barista that they were part of the club, that they were kind of valued members of the, of that Starbucks location.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what jobs do people hire, you know, coffee to do? And specifically, what jobs are people hiring brewing coffee at home to do? So I was wondering if you could think of any off the top of your head, actually.
For sure. I mean, I guess kind of going right way back to it is like there's a good documentary that was just released. I think you can watch it on Vimeo is where we watched it, but it's called A Film About Coffee. And it kind of takes you through the whole process of where coffee comes from, shows you coffee farmers and how they go about, you know, picking the coffee. And I mean, I know we didn't talk about it really as much, but only like a stat, I guess, a general stat is one coffee tree from a farm produces only 1 pound of coffee each year. And that is about 4,000 hand-picked green coffee beans. So there's just so much that goes into this specialty coffee that we are just buying off the shelves or brewing and or going and consuming in these shops, that it is our job as, you know, just responsible human beings to kind of acknowledge that and do the best that we can, you know, do as much as you can to brew it as good as it can, kind of acknowledge and thank them in a certain way, I guess, you know, because
yeah,
I watching that video and that documentary is just like, wow, man, I just take advantage of just this coffee that we are experiencing on a daily basis, and you just never kind of see how much work goes into it before it gets here. And then just, I've done some video work for a local coffee shop and seen how detailed they are in on the roasting process. You know, there's just so much time and effort that goes into the coffee beans before we get them that, you know, I feel like it's our job to just do the best that we can to brew it and then share that with our friends, you know, like...
Mm-hmm.
One of the coolest things is, I mean, coffee brings everybody together. If you're meeting up with an old friend, you know, most of the time it's over a cup of coffee or over a beer. But, like, being able to share that experience, wake up every morning, brew it for my wife, and just sit down and take a little bit of time before, you know, we have to go off to work and just enjoy it, I think is a big part of it for sure.
Totally. Actually, that actually hits on something that I think about a lot, which is coffee evokes feeling. It evokes memories. It evokes sometimes like these wistful dreams we have. Like if you went to Tumblr and you searched for coffee or you clicked on a coffee tag and then just – I'm actually going to do it right now. You looked at all of the pictures that came up here. So I'm doing it live right now. I just put in coffee.
All right.
So let's see what happens. So the first picture is of this like worn book on a table and then the cup of coffee there. So there's like this image that it evokes. Like what are you hiring that cup of coffee to do? Oh, I want to be, you know, curled up with a book and feel like I'm in that space. I'm going to keep scrolling down here. Another one is of someone in like a foreign place, like it looks like they're in, you know, maybe France or something, and it's a table that looks out on the street. And I think even if I'm at home, sometimes coffee gives me not just a nostalgic feeling, but also this feeling of being maybe even somewhere else, you know, this feeling of maybe being in a warm cabin somewhere.
Oh, for
even
sure.
If it's just at my house, it kind of helps you feel differently. And I think for people brewing at home, that is a part of it. Like you want to feel like maybe it brings back a memory of somewhere where you had coffee, or maybe it just evokes this image in your head that you get a really good sense of this when you browse Tumblr, because there's all these images. Like here's another one of like snow covered trees and, you know, a roaring fire.
Yeah, like, I'm just looking at one right now, and there's like somebody poured like milk or something into their coffee, and it's just like you can almost taste it or feel that or smell that or what exactly from that little gif that they're playing right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's actually a huge, huge job to be done. Why are we brewing coffee at home? Well, we want to feel something. Sometimes when I'm feeling down, or if like I wake up really early in the morning, you want to start like feeling something, you know, you want to feel like maybe special or maybe cozy or whatever it is. And coffee is one of those things that you can brew that makes you feel that way.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and I know from your work in the tech industry as well, it's kind of cool to see that it kind of went from the coffee shop experience to now people are experiencing it at home, but then now they're also bringing it to their workplace. So one of the cool things working, we sit at computers all day long, it's a great excuse to just step away from the computer and take 5 to 10 minutes and brew a cup of coffee and then yep. Come back and you just feel a little bit more rejuvenated and had the time to clear your mind a little bit. So, that's one of the big things too. It's a great way to just slow down and truly experience something a little bit different.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's funny because there's actually a lot of physiological reasons that works. Mm-hmm. So the act of getting up from your desk and just walking over to wherever you make coffee, it gets the blood flowing.
Oh, yeah.
It helps your brain relax. It helps your eyes relax. So there's all these things that are happening. But what you remember in your head with like your lizard brain is when I go and make a coffee, I feel rejuvenated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's could be other things too, like the caffeine helps, you know, all that stuff helps.
Oh, exactly.
But what you're hiring the coffee to do in that case is I need a break. I need to get rejuvenated. I need a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
And I love exploring all these things. The other one I was thinking about before we got on, on the air here is I think the reason a lot of people want to brew great coffee at home is they want to show off a bit. Mm-hmm. When they have guests over, like you could just say, like there's not much that's really exciting about a drip coffee machine, you know, yeah. Like everyone's seen one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the reasons those Nespresso machines were so popular is it was this kind of gimmicky way to make coffee, but it was interesting. So you could like show people like, you just put your mug right here and then you put this little thing here and it comes down like a robot and then it starts, you know, brewing it and then the thing pops out and you get the little, you know, you throw that thing in the garbage.
Uh-huh.
But the whole thing was a show.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's the same way like when I go to Andrew's place and he's got all these crazy siphons and, you know, like cupping spoons and all these things. It's a show. He's a showman. He's entertaining us as guests.
Uh-huh.
And he's, you know, telling us stories about the beans and all those things. Well, part of the job that he's hiring coffee for is a way to entertain his guests.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these things are kind of below the surface. They're not like – they're not things we would articulate or maybe even think of. But I think it's interesting to kind of dig into those because there's a lot of reasons we do the things that we do. And especially like, for example, if you ever decided to like write a book or, you know, create a product for people brewing coffee at home, these are the reasons people want to, but they don't articulate it like this. Mm-hmm. Like no one would say, oh, I want to brew coffee at home so I can show off to my friends. Cause mm-hmm. we just don't bring those things out.
Yeah.
But the truth is, we actually kind of do.
Oh, yeah.
Like the other reason I want to learn coffee, if I'm completely honest, is coffee culture is becoming such a thing. Like, it's become a thing that people talk about,
mm-hmm.
just like people talk about great beer and great food and whatever. And I don't want to be left out of those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in Portland with, you know, friends in Portland and they're all talking about coffee, I want to be able to interact. I want to be able to be a part of that. And so one of the jobs I'm even hiring this podcast to do right now, this interview, is I don't want to look like a fool. You know, I want to be able to participate in that discourse. I want to have something to say. I want to have a little tidbit of knowledge. When people ask me how I brew my coffee, I want to be able to say, oh, I only use this hand grinder and be able to have a story, right?
Exactly.
And that's a huge motivation. It's probably actually a big motivation if people think about it, even people that are listening to this podcast, that they've got all these reasons of like, this is why I want to learn how to brew better coffee. And it's not always about how the coffee tastes.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd say 90% or not 90%, a majority of the reason that I do brew coffee is the experience that it produces, the friendships that I like being able to, this is the first time I've actually talked to you in person. And
yeah.
It's because of coffee, even though we're not brewing it together or consuming it, like it brought us together. I met Aaron, one of my friends who I consider now through this, and he was on the podcast, and now we're sharing a bag of coffee each with each other. So it's a unique experience, I think. And, it is accessible to people, you know, there's little things you can do to start brewing better coffee, explore your coffee shops in your local area, and, just take a little bit of time. And I think, like you're saying, it can change, your outlook on things a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're right. It's like, if you want to get into food, it's like very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those things, like if you're just like more interested in creating like, you know, great food or great food experiences, coffee just seems to be like a great one to start with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's something you consume every day. It's one of the most consumed beverages in the world, you know, so it seems so funny to me that people don't take the time to actually try and find like a good tasting coffee that they're okay with, like a Nespresso or that type of machine, you know. They don't want to explore it a little bit more, you know. It's something that they just want to push a button and within a couple minutes be ready and then run out the door with it, you know.
Yeah.
But
well, this is actually a good point. So for you, as someone who's like advocating for people to brew better coffee, the way that you're going to convince them is by addressing the jobs to be done in their lives that aren't currently being fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And the so that person who is, you know, just drinking Dunkin' Donuts coffee or is just drinking Nespresso coffee or is still just buying the cheapest coffee they can, it's just like all it is like a cheap drug for them. That's it has no other utility.
Mm-hmm.
The key is for you to observe those people because they won't articulate it.
Mm-hmm.
But observe those people and find out what other jobs to be done in their lives there are in their lives that brewing their own coffee at home could fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, the one example could be, you know, on Twitter, you might notice someone say, "Oh my God, I'm so nervous. I'm going to Portland and, you know, I'm even scared to order a cup of coffee from there because I feel like I'm going to be, you know, maybe looked down on or something."
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time.
So, you know, for them, the motivation to start brewing at home might not be, I want to have better coffee. That might be a side effect, but mm-hmm. the primary motivation is I just don't want to be embarrassed when I go to Portland. a funny story, you know, so I actually do not, this is a deeply confusing thing for me, but in Canada, we say Americano. And just like I say JavaScript, which, see, you're laughing. I have no idea why it's funny. And so I was in Portland, and there's a little coffee shop there called, is it called Heart?
Yeah, Heart Roasters.
Heart Roasters, yeah. So go in there, and I say, can I have an Americano? And the guy goes, excuse me? I said, "What?" Like, I have no idea what I'm doing wrong. He says, "You mean Americano."
Yeah.
And to me, first of all, that's hilarious because you don't say, like, you don't say American, you say American.
Yeah.
And the whole story behind the Americano is it was like them, the Americans watering down espresso, like the Italian espresso, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's hilarious to me that you guys pronounce it Americano. Americano almost sounds like more British to me.
Uh-huh.
Americano, you know, it sounds like very like, and to me, the way Canadians say it almost sounds like more like Southern U.S., like Americano, you know, it's like a very like, so anyway, so that gets to these motivations, you know, like why do people want to brew better coffee at home? Well, initially it might not be the taste, you know, mm-hmm. or maybe they've got a guest coming over and they know that their guest only wants good coffee, or maybe they got embarrassed in the past, like they brewed some coffee at home and it just tasted awful,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so their whole motivation is like, okay, next time they come or before they come again or before we have guests again, I've got to figure out how to brew a good cup of coffee. So, yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up because I think those things are interesting.
Oh, you
know,
yeah,
what,
for sure.
What gets people in? And it's way more effective to address those things than to say, like, if I think the coffee I'm drinking right now is fine, you're not going to get convince me to brew coffee at home if you say it's going to taste better.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, kind of rationally we think, well, of course, why? Who wouldn't want better tasting coffee? But if people say, well, it's fine, you know, like here in Canada we have, do you know what a double-double is?
No, I don't.
So a double-double, if you go into a Tim Hortons anywhere in Canada, Tim Hortons is like, you have them in the U.S. too, but it's like a Dunkin' Donuts.
Yep.
But if you go into any Tim Hortons in Canada and you order a double-double is a regular cup of coffee with two shots of cream and two shots of sugar. That's a double-double. And it's like a Canadian cultural icon. Like it comes up in our kind of language all the time. And so, you know, if you were trying to convince someone and say, you know what, double doubles are gross. Like, why would you drink one of those? You know, there's no way that they're going to switch because for them, the double double is like part of their life. They like it, you know.
Uh-huh.
But you might be able to convince them to you know, brew coffee at home without putting a ton of cream and sugar in it if, you know, there's another reason you can find that, you know, appeals to them. And it might not have anything to do with the way it tastes.
Yeah. I mean, I could go on forever, but one of the guys we've been talking to, he actually went into an office setup and just started brewing better coffee, gave them better coffee to start brewing, and gave them a different device. And it was just a major, big office. And kind of they did a little study, but they found that people were actually using or completely eliminated cream and sugar from the coffee because the coffee actually just tasted good. You know, some people think that coffee just tastes like coffee and that there is not different flavors that you can get from it. And yeah, so all those people who are sitting at their computers all day are consuming less sugar and unnatural stuff in their coffee, and they're actually getting a better experience and having a healthier benefit from it. So it's kind of, we could go on forever about this stuff, but that's another interesting fact that I think people don't really think about.
Exactly. Exactly, man.
Wow. I think we covered a lot of stuff, and hopefully you got a few things from the episode yourself.
Yeah, totally, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it was pretty awesome to be able to finally actually talk to you in person and have you on the show. And for the listeners out there, where can they find you online, and how can they connect with you?
Oh, man. Well, if you're interested in products and marketing and web apps and all that stuff, you can read my blog, justinjackson.ca. And I'm on Twitter, the letter M, the letter I, Justin. So M-I, Justin.
Awesome. Yeah, if anybody is interested in that stuff, I'd highly suggest get on Justin's newsletter. He's a great writer and always has some good tips for the tech industry, but I think they can be, personally, they apply to much more. So hop on that and follow him online. And thanks again, Justin.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right, take care.
You too.